Welcome to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast, a weekly conversation about mental health, personal development, and all the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. For more information or to find a therapist in your area, visit our website at therapyforblackgirls.com. While I hope you love listening to and learning from the podcast, it is not meant to be a substitute for a relationship with a licensed mental health professional. Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for joining me for session 368 of the Therapy for Black Girls podcast. We'll get right into our conversation after a word from our sponsors. Why do friendship breakups sometimes hurt more than romantic ones? How do I make friends in a new city? Is it true that women can't actually be good friends to one another? I'm exploring all of these questions and so much more in my book, Sisterhood Heals, now available in paperback at your local independent bookstore or at sisterhoodheals.com. Grab a copy for you and your girls and let's talk about it. State Farm believes understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount because it provides a platform to share valuable stories and information that uplifts our community. We know how valuable it is to seek support, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm's here to help, funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities, and like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. At Therapy for Black Girls, we like to share helpful knowledge. No gatekeeping here. So here's a tip that could be doubly helpful. Discover will automatically double all the cash back you've earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cash Back Match. That means you could turn $150 cash back to $300. How's that for no gatekeeping? With Discover, you can earn double without having to know someone who knows someone. It pays to Discover. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The virus that causes shingles is sleeping in 99% of people over 50. It's lying dormant, waiting, and it could reactivate at any time. And while not everyone at risk will develop shingles, it strikes as a painful, blistering rash that can last for weeks. Think you're not at risk for shingles? It's time to wake up, because shingles could wake up in you. If you're over 50, talk to your doctor or pharmacist about shingles prevention.
While therapists are often revered for our contributions to the mental wellness of others, our culture can also be guilty of denying us humanity with assumptions that we're always willing to provide therapeutic advice at the drop of a dime, or that we don't feel things too. Today, I brought the group chat back together to discuss how therapists are showing up in our everyday lives. First, we have Dr. Ayanna Abrams, a licensed clinical psychologist who works under her solo practice, Ascension Behavioral Health. She's the co-founder of Not So Strong, a mental health program curated for Black women to strengthen their sense of self and connection to others through the use of vulnerable storytelling. We also have Dr. Joy Beckwith, who is a psychologist, resident radio expert, speaker, and college professor. Her passion for bridging the gap between the mind-body connection has allowed her to work with executives, entertainers, professional athletes, and entrepreneurs nationwide. Some of the points we discuss are the importance of setting boundaries with friends and family when seeking therapeutic advice, how to ensure we're not allowing our work to bleed into our personal lives, and the biggest misconceptions people tend to have about therapists' lives. If something resonates with you while enjoying our conversation, please share with us on social media using the hashtag TBGInSession. Or join us over in the Sister Circle to talk more about the episode. You can join us at community.therapyforblackgirls.com. Here's our conversation. Well, hello, friends. Thank you so much for joining me again. We have reconvened, but back in our little Zoom boxes, not on stage this time. Kind of sad.
Feels good to be back, though. Feels good to be back.
Always a pleasure. Of course. Of course. So today we are talking about therapists as humans. So really the personhood of therapists, because I think sometimes people engage with us almost as empathy robots, as opposed to like whole people with our own stuff going on. And I think people are sometimes surprised that, oh, therapists have feelings too. So before we jump into the conversation, though, I don't know that we have actually like fully introduced y'all to the people in terms of how long you've been practicing, like your areas of specialty. So Dr. Joy, can you start off and just let us know like how long you've been practicing and like what it is you actually do as a psychologist?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been practicing since 2014. Well, I've been private practice since 2014. I was at a hospital before then. My specialty is trauma, but I see a lot of individuals who have depression, anxiety. I work with a lot of what I call like high functioning individuals. So high functioning athletes, entertainers, CEOs, and especially entrepreneurs. But trauma is my specialty. I am a team psychologist for a local professional basketball league. So I do some consult work there. And I'm the co-founder of CAFOR for Atlanta. And we specialize in trauma, do a lot of trauma work, anxiety work, depression work. So just all the things for mental wellness, especially if you are out here, like life is life. So really, really busy in your respective space.
And what about you, Dr. Ayanna?
So I have been in practice in Atlanta since 2012. Solo practice, the name is Ascension Behavioral Health, where I specialize in mood disorders, depressive disorders, anxiety disorders, bipolar disorder. I work with a lot of graduate students, medical professionals from medical school, and physicians. I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, and I also do, an arm of my practice does corporate consulting, so corporate wellness, navigating kind of the DEI space in corporations, more so towards racial equity in the workplace. And you'll see me on podcasts and all the such, right? Talking about various things.
Beautiful, beautiful. So I'm curious for both of you, what are some of the challenges that have come up for you being a psychologist, kind of like the tension between being a mental health professional, but also being like a full human? What are some of the unexpected challenges that have come up for you there?
I think one of the things that I would say in terms of challenge, it's just, I think, goes back to what you were saying earlier, Dr. Joy, where people don't expect, you know, you to have feelings or to be just as impacted about something as they are. It's like, well, no, like that hurts. And so I feel the pain as well. And I think also whether it's like having feelings, having empathy, like being impacted, but also I think like having the answers. I think because this is what we do, like people do think like, okay, so what do you think or what's best here? And it's like, well, no. There are so many factors that influence decision. And so it's like, I don't have all the answers. I do have feelings and I get sad, all the things as well. Like I'm impacted by the world just like you are. So I think that's a challenge of like, girl, I don't have the answer. I'm still processing too.
What I would add to that is that I think that people struggle a lot with me, and I think therapists in general, like having boundaries, right? Like not being available for certain things, whether that be emotionally, whether that be advice. I think it shows up in my practice, right? Where I just need to have this availability because someone's in pain and needs to be seen when they want to be seen or need to be seen. So I see that a lot. And definitely in more personal relationships, I do notice this dynamic online as well, though, that when therapists show up and have problems with certain things or feel annoyed by stuff, there's a sense that like, you shouldn't have, quote unquote, the negative feelings. You're a therapist, or you shouldn't struggle with things because you're a therapist. And I literally have had people in my personal life say, but you know how to get out of that. You know how to not feel that. So I don't even really understand how you could feel anxious about this or how you could feel upset about this because you can work yourself out of it. It feels really dehumanizing when people do that and they quite literally don't understand that we cannot work on ourselves in that way. People get very confused when I say I have a therapist. They're just like, you? All right. So then they also make this further association that something must be really wrong if I have a therapist. So how could I be a therapist who has a therapist? So depending on the relationship, people go further with that. But it's usually about this lack of allowance to be vulnerable, essentially, or to have vulnerabilities that shows up a lot.
And Dr. A, what would you say leads to some of that confusion or a misinterpretation of who a therapist is, that we wouldn't have our own therapist or that we have all the answers. Like, what do you think contributes to people thinking that?
Well, we look at my personal relationships without going too far, depending on who was the person, right? It serves them, right? To not have to navigate my feelings. It's beneficial for them, for me, to either have all the answers or not need this or whichever it is. So I think depending on the person and the relationship, it can show up from that place. I think too, it's people's lack of understanding of vulnerability and not seeing therapists as human. So they really just don't see that we would also need and deserve the same kind of help and care that other people have. So I'll usually try to give the example of like, well, your medical doctor has a physician. I've literally had somebody say like they shouldn't need one. But for the most part, when I say that, people understand it. Like if your medical doctor breaks a leg or does this, like they still get to go to a doctor. Why would it be any different for us? But it seems like, again, because people see us in this very like limited way in the room, they view us as omniscient. They view us as all knowing. Then it really doesn't click that we don't have the answers to things. So there's this kind of strange way where I think people put therapists on a pedestal as the people who can save a lot of stuff. Well, at the same time, there's a lot of people who don't trust therapists. So I think depending on who you're coming across, you'll get either respond to your vulnerability.
That's great points. And Dr. Joy, you mentioned this idea that you have all the advice or people will come to you and say like, well, what do you think? How do you navigate that?
So we're talking about like outside of the therapy session. So I have a lot of little sayings. Sometimes people are like, what do you think? I'm like, no, I don't think. So that you understand that this is a different type of relationship. And I may say something in this context of this relationship that isn't necessarily what I would say in a therapeutic relationship, right? Because those dynamics are different. But also knowing when I'm not supposed to have any advice or I'm not supposed to have the answers in those spaces and just being okay with, I really don't know, or I don't have any thoughts about that. Or saying like, I think you should talk to your therapist. I think really clear boundaries about this is my friend circle, if this is my family. I love being able to turn off the work that I do as much as you can, when you can, turning it off there to say, I don't have the answers, or I don't really know. What do you think? And being able to give it back to them, trying not to get into this role just because they expect us to have the answers does not mean I have to have the answers. And knowing that I don't have to wear that hat, because once you start having all the answers, then of course they come back to you because you typically have all of the answers. So I usually sometimes say, I don't have, like, what do you think? I don't think. Or like, okay, we're going to ask Dr. Joy about it. And I'm like, let's not. So, but I make it in a way where they understand I'm not being funny, but sometimes I don't have the answers. And having really healthy boundaries, knowing like, no, you don't want me in that.
And it does feel like a tight line to walk because, I mean, in your friendship circles and in your other relationships, people naturally like ask for advice. And I think that that's human, but it does feel like there is a different expectation because of what you do maybe as a mental health professional, that there is like an added layer of like, okay, a professional opinion as opposed to like just a girlfriend opinion.
Absolutely. In the weight they put on our answers. Or even if you do have a thought like, you know, oh, girl, like whatever you want to say, it's like no matter what anyone else says, because you are a professional, because this is what you do, the weight that they put on your response. And sometimes I'll say like, you know, I don't know, but I think you should probably talk. So I'll give just a little bit of something like to guide because you do have some thoughts. But no, like I also don't want that dynamic where I'm responsible for something or start to wear that hat in my friend relationships. Like I just want to be like Joy in these relationships. And I think I also have really good friends who they may say, what do you think? You think that's a problem? Like, girl, you know it's a problem. But they're not really digging deep and actually expecting to have therapeutic conversations because they know like we are friends for real in real life. But yeah, the weight that they put on our responses because it's what we do professionally is pretty significant. Mm-hmm.
Anything to add to that, Dr. A?
No, I agree with that. And I was going to add the weight that they put on that and this assumption that we can't wait to help, that I want to be able to answer this mm-hmm. question or give you advice because I think I know the right answer. Like I will have mostly like family members. If I say they're saying something and I don't jump in, they're just like, are you not going to say anything? What do you think about this? And I'm like, listen, I don't feel any different than such and such does or such and such does, but they kind of assume this like eagerness to help that because we have the skills to help other people, that we want to be using our skills all over the place, at breakfast, at brunch, at the family reunion, that we just want to help when we see or hear that they might be a problem, that's where we want to be spending our time. A lot of people don't see this as a profession of ours, that we're just supposed to be these bleeding hearts. Which I also didn't add before, like something that surprises me. It doesn't surprise me anymore, but that whole bleeding heart piece is that when any conversations come up around fees or rates, right? There's a different response that I get when money is involved and stuff, because people have this association of, well, that shouldn't be something that costs that much. Or that should be something, again, that I should be able to access because it's about health and because it's about care for people. So you putting a barrier, what they see as a barrier to this, means that we're doing something that's awry in this field.
I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier, Dr. A, like they expect us to be all knowing, but not necessarily all experiencing. And it's like, well, no, like I also experience those feelings. I also may have some anxiety around the things that I want to be able to do this year and being able to do those things or carry those things out. So it's just making sure that we add the human aspect to it. Like, no, like I also have to make a living as well. And my goal is to be able to do both, to be able to give you great service, to be able to be here and care for you, but also to be able to afford like my mortgage.
You wouldn't work for free. Why would you expect us to work for free? You literally would not work for free and or a discounted income like we are expected to do.
Yeah, right.
So I'm curious, because we know that so much of the work that we do as therapists is mediated through who we are as persons, right? As people. How do you balance or set boundaries around what kinds of clients you are seeing, or when a client's stuff kind of activates your stuff? What kinds of things are in place, or how do you think about that as a therapist to kind of both protect yourself and the clients?
Jumping into my therapy sessions, Dr. Joy. My goodness. Because I have I have a soft spot, and I have a very hard time saying no to Black women who want to be clients in my practice. And I still have a hard time with that. I have boundary issues around that. So I'm probably seeing too many clients, right, because of that. So I think, again, kind of consultation, supervision, right, the things that we've been trained, right, to make sure that we are doing to support ourselves. But I know that one of my softer spots or kind of vulnerabilities is Black women or Black people in pain. And I really need to remember the aspects of my burnout and how it shows up and when I'm doing too much. And I've had to really come into that practice and attunement the last 5 or so years, because I wasn't screening right in a certain way in terms of like who I was taking in my practice. I was just so concerned about the systemic barriers and not wanting to be one of those barriers and wanting to make sure that people got good care, but also having to really remind myself that I am human. There's but so many hours in a day that it is safe for me and for clients in terms of how many people I'm seeing and how much time I'm spending with clients, that I can do but so much paperwork and still be on top of my business kind of acumen in my practice, as well as serving clients well, and having to really grieve that I can't do more, that I can't see as many clients as I want to do. And that's been this ongoing practice for me, the grieving, the boundary work, the acceptance of my humanity, I mean, just what that means in terms of my limits. So maybe finding some other ways to have larger impact, because I can't take you all in my kind of one-to-one or one-to-two practice in terms of couples.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think I do some of the exact same things, Dr. A. Just the heaviness that I feel when I feel like, oh, this person would really be a good fit, or I feel that I could really help this person, but also knowing that I don't have the capacity and being able to sit with that. I think for me, I had to navigate or had to explore what's the story that I'm telling, like what's driving this need for me to want to see as many people as possible, and the effect of that. Like, okay, so now you're sad. Now you're feeling down. Are you afraid? What are you afraid of? And also the narrative that, like, hey, there are some other really excellent people that can provide this service. So it does not have to be me. Like, as much as I would love for it to be me, but it's like, if not me, I have a great, nice circle of capable therapists. Like, let me send you to this person. I know you'd be in really good hands. But I think it starts off with screening really, really well as much as possible. So you'll know, like, hey, who do I work well with? And trying to be able to find that ideal client that you feel that's a really good match early on. And then definitely the consultation, the supervision, the groups have been very, very helpful. And then knowing that it does not have to be me. Mm-hmm. It does not have to be me. I can also refer them out to somebody. Yeah. But it is really tough, because it's like, well, you know, well, I could put them in on Friday at 12. And it's like, okay, so when are you going to have lunch? But being able to sit in that space, like, no, you can't. You said you were going to do notes during that time. But really thinking about, by you doing that, what are you giving up? So you're adding this person. And what are you taking away from yourself? Whether it's my time that I set aside to do notes or to basically just have lunch.
You know, something that I wish we had more training on in our or at least I know my graduate program didn't do the best at this. I think that a lot of therapists, emerging therapists, and even therapists that I guess I'm considered mid-career now, really struggled with internalizing the brokenness of the mental health care system. So really internalizing this responsibility that, oh, I know that there are barriers, so let me not perpetuate the barriers in this. We know the barriers and the stigma associated with Black people. So, oh my goodness, if a Black person has done all the work to do this courageous thing and ask for therapy, I can't turn them away now because I've internalized that they're not ever going to try again, right? So it was all that stuff that was really, really taking over that I still have to keep an eye on, but I put some distance in between it being my responsibility to like save the mental health care system, right? That none of us can do that as one therapist or even like a group practice. But I don't think that that is offered to us. I don't think we are taught about the importance of that kind of differentiation. But I know that for a long time, I really took it in as my responsibility to not be the broken system.
Yeah. And then Dr. A, also thinking about too, though, if we do fill to capacity or if we are taking on all of that, what does it do to us? We talked about burnout earlier and just making sure that we don't show up like, you know, okay, finally we schedule them, we have them in for a session, but are you getting the best me? Because we know what we're like when we're seeing, we know what our sweet spot is. We know what it's like when we're, you know, really full of energy and ready to see the clients that we see. And knowing that if we're over that limit, am I doing them a disservice? Like we talk about, do no harm. It's like, okay, so what point am I exhausted? What point am I tired? And the things where, you know, I love reading and just finding articles and things for clients sometimes outside of session. And it's like, well, if you're so packed, then you're tired. It's like, okay, I'm going to bed instead of doing that stuff that I normally would do in order to assist a client. So really just taking it back to, yeah, there are these barriers and it's tough, but I want to make sure that when you do see me, if you do see me, that you're having the best experience and I'm giving you my best self too.
Such an important point, Dr. A. I don't think I ever had that conversation in grad school either. And I think that it is only through conversations with y'all and working with my own therapist that I do realize how much weight I feel to, like you said, give people this good experience, and we don't want to become a part of the barriers and like all of these systemic pieces that I think are really, really important for us to think about. And I also love that you shared that because I think it also taps into one of these things that I think is a misconception about therapists, that we are not thinking about our clients post-session. So this idea that like therapists are only paid friends kind of thing. And so once you're gone, we're not thinking about you. And I think what you're articulating is not that we don't ever turn it off, but that we are always, I think, in a lot of ways, thinking about how to improve the system, how to do the best things for our clients. How do you all keep a balance there to not be thinking about that all the time?
I think it goes back to what Dr. A was saying earlier too. Like it does. It penetrates all of your little open mind space because we want to do good work. We want to do work that is expansive. I think it goes back to, for me, the supervision, the consultation, and having like our friend group being able to say, okay, friend, do you have time for that? Okay, friend, how is that going to look? Or where are you going to put that at? Having somebody hold me accountable for these big ideas or these big dreams, or, oh, okay. Yep. And tell me where you're putting that with all of your free time, because we do think, we do care. And there is so much. Like we see the difficulties, right? We see the systemic problems and we want to be the answer. We want to be a part of the solution and not the problem. But having someone say, okay, what's another idea where it's not all on us? It's not all on me to fix it, right? Or if you do want to do something like a group, it's like, okay, well, you cannot be just you doing this group. Can you split it with another therapist? You have the first one, they have the second one. So thinking about how you are able to still do the work, but you don't have to do all of the work yourself. And being in spaces to explore other opportunities of still targeting the problem without taking yourself out in the process.
Yeah. I think what's been really helpful for me to strike that balance, which still I do practice boundaries around it, is using other resources. So I think earlier in my career, it would be like, oh, the therapy space has to be the space that creates all this change. But now there's so many more podcasts, there's articles on stuff, there's stuff on TV or in the media that's doing a more kind of ethical job of like showing care and kind of showing mental health concerns. So I now will balance out a bit more of those resources with the hour that we have together. But I'm going to send you a podcast episode that talks exactly about what we talked about, and you can do some learning on your own, right? So that I do not feel all of this pressure to be the one space that gives you all of this. So for me, it's been really helpful in terms of taking in other resources and just having this breadth of resources just filtering through my brain when I do think about clients outside of session to be able to share some things. with them, what I usually need to practice boundaries around is, because I'm listening to so many podcasts, because I'm reading so many articles, I ain't gonna be talking to y'all all the time every time I read something. So I just need to like be like, okay, I can share this with them in the next session. I don't have to share this with them in between. But offering or kind of creating those adjuncts, like a book, is also really helpful. So me also being able to lead them to other resources, I think also augments the work. So I personally feel less pressure to be the space. And I know that's about me and my ego stuff as therapist, but it's been helpful to redirect them to other resources.
And I think in terms of balancing, Dr. Joy, so that my brain is typically thinking about what can I offer? What have I read that may be helpful? Oh, this is really good. It helps me to have this diverse friend group where they will say, oh, this is what we're reading. And so I don't want to be left at FOMO when it comes to, oh, my friends are reading about this or they're talking about this show. So it forces me where I really am reading this book or I'm looking for podcasts that may be helpful for someone. It forces me like to turn that brain off and remember the other part of me, this other side of me that, hey, you actually have friends who go to their own therapist. They don't need you for therapy. They don't really want to read about this anxious book or whatever. They're talking about another book. It holds me accountable. Calls me to the carpet, like, you don't have anything to share. Like, you haven't read any book this year, but books and podcasts that are helpful. And so to do that and to read books and listen to podcasts that are helpful for my work that I do and to make sure I don't forget about this other part. So that's one of the ways that I turn it off from always thinking, because people download from the cloud. I'm like, oh, this would be really, really good for them. Yeah. So I try to make sure I balance it out with some other stuff and having great friends who are just like, or they're sending recipes. They're doing other things to remind you that there's this other part of you than this person that's just like this caregiver. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. More from our conversation after the break. Nowadays, a lot of these big companies pretend to care about our communities and issues with nothing more than lip service. State Farm is the opposite. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help educate in financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something they care deeply about. They want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't mean authenticity, that it takes a good neighbor to sponsor programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, and to fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth that to date participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This is Angela Yee from Angela Yee's Lip Service. I've traveled around the world, and one thing that I always like to do is stay at an Airbnb property. I love it so much that I said, you know what? I want to get my own. My broker and I actually got our own Airbnb, and my requirements were, I want a place that I can drive to so I can have quick weekend getaways. I want a place that I love, so even if it's not me staying there, my guests will have the time of their lives. And we found that with my property, Roxbury House. It's in the Catskills. It's about a 2.5-hour drive from New York City. And the extra cash that we get from hosting is pretty amazing. I've had people go up there for many retreats. I even had somebody I went to high school with go and use the property, and they actually wrote to me because they loved it so much and had a great experience. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
At Therapy for Black Girls, we like to share helpful knowledge. No gatekeeping here. So here's a tip that could be doubly helpful. Discover will automatically double all the cash back you've earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. That means you could turn $150 cash back to $300. How's that for no gatekeeping? With Discover, you can earn double without having to know someone who knows someone. It pays to Discover. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. So something I know that none of our grad programs really tapped into because of when we were trained is the way that our humanity and our personhood has been extended because of social media platforms, right? So we are people, which means that we are also engrossed in the social media landscape. And so we are using platforms like Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all the things as people, but also as mental health professionals. So I'd love for you to share like how you manage joy using TikTok as like just joy versus Dr. Joy on TikTok. Like, how do you think through what you share, what you like, what you repost, and your thoughts about like the responsibility that we have as clinicians in using mental health platforms?
So I think that's an excellent question. And that's one of the areas that I struggled with early on. So I have my Ask Dr. Joy platform. And it took me a while to make. So you may see like, oh, she's not super active on there, because I feel a sense of responsibility for whatever I put on there, because there's so many pages out there with information about various topics. And so I felt a heaviness of whatever you put on there. It's almost like they're expecting this to be like really good information. It's your Ask Dr. Joy page. It's your professional page. So being responsible there. But every time I go on there, I don't want to like be in my therapy hat. I want to sometimes look at things that like TikTok make me buy it or whatever. And so for me, I set some boundaries around when I'm on that page. Like, I had to really turn it off and turn it down, because I'm on there and all the algorithms for that are just, you know, everything that moves my heartstrings, like all the books, all the therapy books, all the issues of the world. And that page was very heavy for me. So I have to basically decide, when am I going to opt into that hat in that world? Because I already know what's going to feed me. And then creating this other page where this is more of my whatever else you're interested in, whether it's recipes. And so really knowing, just remembering that I am human too, and I don't want to always be in the therapy world or in the helping world, and I have feelings, and then this other side of me. So trying to have boundaries around what I put on the page, knowing that it is a weight, and acknowledging for me that I feel that what you put out there, people are like, oh, what does she have to say about this? Or, hey, this is Mental Health Awareness Month, the pull of you have to make 5 or 6 posts. Well, do you? What feels authentic and what feels good to you? Or if you just want to be on there and see what your friends are doing, do you need to get off of that page because those DMs are popping, and go to another page? So I had to really wrestle with, what is social media going to look like for you? And do you feel like you have to be on all the platforms all the time, given all of the information? And the answer for me there was no. I didn't have the capacity to do that and show up the way I want to show up in my friend circles and in my practice.
I am not as developed in this area as Dr. Beckwith is. I ain't made it there yet. I'm trying. I ain't made it there. And I've always been in this tussle with social media. So Facebook came about when I was in college. For me, it feels like I did grow up with social media and sharing and just beginning to post stuff. I was 20 years old when I was posting stuff on social media. And my Instagram page, my first one, like originally started as my personal page. And then I started posting mental health stuff and then transitioned it into my business page. So it was always this mix of stuff anyway. It was always this mix of personal people that were there. I mean, I think I struck a fine balance, because I always say that anything I post, if a client or somebody was to ask me about it, I'm fine with what I post. I don't post anything that I would feel embarrassed or that feels too vulnerable for me. But I did realize that, and this was even just in the past few years, that my lens when I'm in that business account, when I'm even looking at social media, I'm looking at stuff to make my own, to post, to like put it into my own words and post it. So even when I believed I was using social media for leisure, it was still content work for me. It was like, oh, yeah, but I would have added this. So let me turn that into a post next week. Like, oh, I would say it like this. I'm like, oh, that is something that came up. Let me put my spin on it in this way. And that was the burnout for me, that it wasn't this space of leisure or like mindless, whatever it is that people scroll social media for. It was always work for me, because I'm looking at other people's ideas and this new content thing that came up, or like, oh, there's this trend to pay attention to and there's this. So when I then did a personal page a few years ago, that gave me a bit of that break. But still, I still find myself doing stuff on my personal page that's related to me being a therapist. I'm still interested in the same things. It's just me using a different page. But who I'm interacting with is different on both pages. But I did recognize that because I'd gone into more content creation, all the content I was seeing was still me thinking about how I could do that and what that looks like. You know, I like that idea. So I'm saving all these things that other people were doing so that I can make some content. And what I ended up doing, I think at some point, maybe a few years ago, I was following thousands of people on my business page, and a lot of them were therapists, and I just unfollowed nearly everyone. So I unfollowed thousands of people a few years ago, and I would say it was a lot of therapists because it was just too much. It was too much of me thinking and constantly working. And also in the same thing of like, when you follow a lot of therapists, you are constantly reevaluating yourself. And like, this is something I could be doing, not even for content stuff, but just me. Everything a therapist says, I'm thinking about for my personal self. So me unfollowing a ton of therapists was really good for my mental health. So I will sometimes recommend, like, don't follow too many of us because we just always have you thinking about yourself and you need a break from that. I was feeling like I was just a constant self-improvement project, all the therapists I was following. So now I follow significantly less. I still follow a lot, but I really needed to step away from therapists of Instagram just to preserve the time that I was spending on social media.
Yeah, I have definitely tried to trick my TikTok algorithm into not knowing that I'm a therapist. Because I'm like, I just want to see who did a coach haul this week or what are the fun baby videos, like all of those kinds of random things. So I try not to like engage very much in the therapy world on TikTok because Instagram then quickly learns like, oh, she wants to see more of this, right? But I mean, I do think you bring up a good point of following too many kind of personal development, self-help kinds of pages then makes you always think there's something wrong that you could be working on and doing things differently.
Yeah.
So what suggestions would you all have for maybe like newer mental health professionals or people who may be younger in their career in terms of like how to ask themselves some questions about like managing this and like keeping the balance between not only for social media, but also just generally when you're thinking about preserving yourself as a therapist versus your humanity and needing to strike a balance there?
I think what worked best for me was for me to be mindful of my energy. So like what gave me energy and then what took away my energy. Just really being aware of that. It's like going back to you, Dr. A, it's like I'm on Instagram a whole lot. You're looking at all of this. Are you leaving that feeling like, okay, I'm getting ready to go look at puppy clothes, make something to eat, or am I now trying to play with reels for another 2 hours? I'm really wanting that space to give me energy or to help me disconnect, but is it really occupying more space and doing almost like more damage than it's doing good for me? And I'm using damage really lightly. But am I coming off of that feeling rejuvenated, feeling refreshed, and feeling like I disconnected, or did my to-do list get longer because now I'm about to go and learn how to do reels or some type of dance or whatever, right? So I was aware of my energy and like what fed me and then what kind of drained me and being okay with that. It's like, okay, so you're going to post more, for example, like social media, like for what? Because the world says you should, because you feel like it gets you more visibility. And then really understanding, well, you're actually visible. Like people are finding you. So really just exploring, like, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? And what works best for you? And trying not to be afraid of, hey, this works best for me. And it may be a season. Like this may be your season where you post a whole lot, or you post a little bit, right? Or you are doing a lot of lives and being okay with being in tune with myself. So I think that was my thing. Like, what's my energy? Does that feel good to me? Or am I doing it because people say we should be doing this now, or this is good? What is it that you need and what's going to get you there, right? If I need to relax more, is this helping the mission or going against it? Or if I need to be more visible, what does that look like? So I'm doing just enough to do that and not too much. So it was a lot for me, a lot of self-exploration. And same thing with what I'm reading and how much I'm doing outside of therapy. Sometimes I'll put together something. I'm like, this feels so wonderful. I can't wait for her to get it or him to get it or listen to it. Like, this is exciting. And doing more of those things that feed my soul and make me feel as if I'm doing really good work in the world, like I'm happy there, or, oh my gosh, I feel heavier. So it's a lot of like, you know, not vibes, but energy for me. But not a half of vibes. Yeah.
One thing I recommend is having friends or people who are not therapists. My goodness. The therapist bubble is real. And at one point, I was only talking to therapists and I would be aghast when I would talk to somebody who's not a therapist. Like, people think like this? What are you doing? Like, you can't say that. And like, it really threw me. And I was just like, oh, because I spend all day talking to clients or I'm talking to other therapists. Those are my closest people from graduate school, from internship, from postdoc. It was also this piece of like, let me talk to the people who get it, who get what my life looks like now. But at the same time, you get it a little bit too much. And I'm a bit disconnected from how a lot of other people think who don't either, not necessarily have these skills, but just don't have to think and talk like this all the time, or don't have to hold all these things in the same way. So it's been really helpful for me to stay connected to people who, you know, I was friends with before graduate school, people who I might have been able to make friends with while I was in graduate school, people who I've made friends with since, who are able to help me tap into those other parts of me when sometimes I might be having a hard time. So staying connected with people who are not in the field, I think, could be really helpful. And another thing that's been really helpful for me that I've only done more recently, like reading like leisure books. For a while, I was only reading books from other therapists, self-help kind of stuff, because I still wanted to learn and do all these different things personally and professionally. But this past few years, I've been reading murder mysteries. I've been reading romance stuff. I've been reading all these different kind of thrillers. And I'm just like, oh, this is fun. I can get through this book in a few weeks versus taking me 3 months to get through, right? These other books that are so heady, that are so like every three pages, I got to sit and reflect and do all this stuff versus being able to move through fiction books. And fiction, I hadn't read fiction since before grad school up until a few years ago. It was just always taking in something that I could learn from, something that I could apply to my clients, something that could help me in my own therapy. I was constantly thinking about self-improvement, mine or others. So being able to get into fiction for the purpose of fiction and documentaries and stuff like that has been a really helpful balance for me. And also reminds me that there are other things that exist outside of this field, or other things that exist outside of working on yourself and just being, right? Like I said, thrillers, romance stuff, like having different kind of feelings come up. Imagination, creativity, I lost a lot of that because I was so in the field. And that's been really helpful for me to strike a balance. Having hobbies and not having a hobby that you're trying to turn into a side hustle, but like just a literal hobby, right, that you do because you do it and do it with other people even, has also been really helpful for me, that I'd recommend.
Dr. A, that goes with having that diverse friend group, because it happened to me where my friends were like, have you read this book? And I was like, no, I haven't read it. And they're all talking about it. And then the next one, you're like, okay, maybe that's just something they came up with and they had dinner. And then the next one is like, oh, have you read this book? And it's like, no, because guess what? It doesn't have to do with trauma, mother wound, depression or whatever. So I haven't read it, but it holds you accountable for like, what are you doing? I think friends remind you that there's more to you than like, basically you are a therapist, right? And so there's more to you than just being a therapist. It's like, okay, so you're not running with us today.
No.
Like, okay. So you can only say no so many times. And they're just like, okay, girl, what are you doing? And being mindful, like, okay, you're not really watering all of these other aspects of you. You have no idea about the shows they're talking about, the books that they're reading, and you haven't been to a lunch, a dinner. So just being in tune with, is this who I am? And does this feed like all the parts of me?
I tell you, in 2013, I was going to DR on a girls' trip, and I took the book A Man's Search for Meaning with me. And my friends were like, what are you doing?
And that's not a romance novel.
Right.
That
is not all the books to take.
Because for me, what I saw, and sometimes that I've now been taking like fiction and kind of leisure, I saw this as like, finally, I'll have some downtime to read this book. I'll be on a plane. I'll be at the pool. I'll be on a beach. And I can actually get through this dense book. And they were upset with me. Like, they were like, I cannot believe that that is what you are choosing to do on vacation. And for me, vacation wasn't be present with vacation. Vacation was time to do all the stuff I haven't been able to do that I can bring with me on vacation. And that was an abrupt, like, girl, what are you doing? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. They wouldn't let me read the book. One of them got into my bag one of the first nights and took, I was upset. I'm not saying that I went gracefully, but like, they didn't allow me to read. And that actually ended up being really, really helpful for me, because it turned into me using downtime as time to fill in time that I felt that I lost or just didn't have in my day to day. And that was the antithesis of what I actually wanted to experience in terms of vacation and what I also promote to clients. And that was, I will never forget that that's what I tried to do. I really tried to do. Mm.
Thank goodness for that intervention.
Right. You're trying to spoil your whole vacation and everybody else's too.
I was really going to go deep and have the sunshine to really reflect and allow me just room and space to go. Wasn't it? It wasn't that type of vacation. That wasn't it. And they wasn't going to allow it. So I appreciate y'all.
More from our conversation after the break. Nowadays, a lot of these big companies pretend to care about our communities and issues with nothing more than lip service. State Farm is the opposite. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help educate in financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something they care deeply about. They want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't mean authenticity, that it takes a good neighbor to sponsor programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, and to fund programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and brown youth that to date participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This is Angela Yee from Way Up with Angela Yee. I've traveled around the world, and one thing that I always like to do is stay at an Airbnb property. I love it so much that I said, you know what? I want to get my own. My broker and I actually got our own Airbnb, and my requirements were, I want a place that I can drive to so I can have quick weekend getaways. I want a place that I love, so even if it's not me staying there, my guests will have the time of their lives. And we found that with my property, Roxbury House. It's in the Catskills. It's about a 2.5-hour drive from New York City. And the extra cash that we get from hosting is pretty amazing. I've had people go up there for many retreats. I even had somebody I went to high school with go and use the property, and they actually wrote to me because they loved it so much and had a great experience. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
At Therapy for Black Girls, we like to share helpful knowledge. No gatekeeping here. So here's a tip that could be doubly helpful. Discover will automatically double all the cash back you've earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. That means you could turn $150 cash back to $300. How's that for no gatekeeping? With Discover, you can earn double without having to know someone who knows someone. It pays to Discover. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. But I do think that that is something that therapists struggle with, like this idea of vacation being an actual vacation and not like just an opportunity to catch up on paperwork, or like, oh, I finally don't have to like do all this so I can do all these other things. It sounds like your support systems have been very helpful in forcing that. But what kinds of other things have been helpful in you changing your mindset around like the necessity of vacations where you actually check out?
That's an area that is still being worked on, because it's exactly that, where okay, I'm off the grid. For me, vacation meant I'm not seeing clients. And so now I can catch up with all of the notes. I can read this book I've been wanting to read. And it's not a leisure book. It's like, oh, this other book about one of our favorite authors that just came out. So it's all the stuff that I haven't been able to do. It really took people saying, you better not touch your phone. Or, you know what, you're not actually bringing your computer. Or, you know, we're going somewhere like, oh, they don't have Wi-Fi. Of course everyone has Wi-Fi. But it takes like people on the vacation. Like, I just really don't want to be that person too, where it's like, oh, where's Joy? Like, she's going to do some work, or she's going to log into this meeting. So for me, it was really all by force, and it was really my support system. I'm still working on, oh, you deserve rest and rest is important. So I am telling myself all of those things. I'm working on them and trying to strengthen that muscle because I know it. And I, you know, I tell myself, like, you don't want to burn out. This is what you actually preach. And if you need some time after your vacation to like now do this work where you don't have clients, then to do that. But it has really been by force. It's been trips where, is it really worth it for you to pay that much for Wi-Fi? Or everyone's out. You want to be the only one doing notes? Like, with all these papers? Like, look at yourself. So it's been forced and some stern conversations.
I agree. Like I said, I'm not fully there. I am the person who has paid for Wi-Fi on the plane before, right? In order to still kind of get something done. Because again, I've got 4 hours where I can't do anything else. Now's the time to do it. So what's been helpful for me is that I now have a stack of leisure books that I do want to get to, and they're not self-help. The only nonfiction ones will be like memoirs and stuff, but no self-help or kind of self-development. I will also download shows and episodes onto my computer for when I'm traveling. So I have leisure stuff to watch on the plane or when I'm there. Like, those are the things that help me to not go into the work-related stuff as much as I can. And like I said, usually when I'm traveling, the people who I'm traveling with are not colleagues and it's not a work trip. So they are like, what are you doing? You shouldn't be doing that now. Close your computer. I have not gotten to a point where I do not take my work computer. I'm not ready.
I'll tell you what works there, Dr. A. So I almost had a panic attack, but to baby steps. So on my last vacation, the agreement was to not take my computer and to take my iPad. You can still do a whole lot on the iPad, but guess what? I don't know when the last time I used the iPad. So it would take a lot of learning and trying to like scroll and the little keyboard. So it made it more difficult. Like you're really not about to do a whole bunch of notes on your iPad because I don't use it regularly. So it's like baby steps. So I still feel that I can connect to the world if I need to. I don't have as many apps on there. So it's like baby steps. So you don't totally go cold turkey.
My tablet is my work computer, essentially, but I need like a Kindle.
I need a Kaboodle. What's the baby version? Look, Kaboodle. Like something where, you know what? All you're going to play is Tetris, Pac-Man. You're not about to send them text messages.
Literally is what I would need. And again, because I have my phone, I could do most things anyway, but I would need that kind of device. Like not having a smartphone, getting a flip phone. Again, I would really need that stuff that doesn't have all of the different distractions because it's very easy for me to go into an email. It's very easy for me to also be working. And you had named something. I think it's therapist entrepreneurs. It's the entrepreneur part that gets me. If I worked for probably like an agency and turned in all my stuff and I'm done at the end of my day and I'm actually done, that's different. But because I am running a business, it's relentless. There's always something to do. So that I know that that makes it harder for me. There's always something to look at and review and a system to pay attention to and something to improve and something to edit on the back end. So I think that also makes it a lot harder if you are also running a business.
One of the things that does work for me is instead of giving myself all or nothing, I do well with goals and like checkboxes. Like, okay, so you can only do 1 hour of work today. Can only do blah, blah, blah. So you can check your email twice. And so I love being able to hold myself accountable and giving myself some. It's like, well, you're actually not going to be the most pleasant person if I tell you to get off all email the entire day. So you have twice. You want to do it at breakfast and lunch, or you want to spread that thing out for breakfast and dinner. So really figuring out how can I take care of that little aspect of me that is wondering how the business is going and making sure that there are no major fires and being able to be present too. So give me the Kaboodle and give me a little bit of permission.
I can do that. Kaboodle starts with a C or a K, because I'm listening.
I don't know what this device is. I think that was something Dr. Joy made up. That's not.
It sounds like a kid. It's a Kaboodle. It sounds like something that kids play with, you know, like fancy names, like doodle or something with a little. It's probably not real. But
there is something that, like, my first iPad kind of thing is what she's basically referring like to. Like, what would you give kids?
Kids iPad, like a kid's Kindle, right? That has all these controls and all that kind of stuff. I can't even go on YouTube, basically. Yeah,
no YouTube.
If I just go and go and say that I'm 13, that I can't do nothing on it. So
exactly.
Yeah, we can set it up. Like, how old are you? 13. So therefore, there's a lot. It may even shut down after a certain time.
But yeah, like you can set time limits and all kinds of stuff on those kinds of things.
That's exactly what I mean. Just being real honest.
So this conversation is a part of our larger celebration of Minority Mental Health Awareness Month in July. And our theme this year is holding space for healers. And so since you two are mid-career, past the early part of your career, I would love for you to wrap us up by sharing something with maybe younger therapists or newer people to the field about how you have persevered and really prevented yourself from maybe experiencing burnout as a professional.
I would say not doing things alone. Ask the questions. I did so many things the first 5 years, even though I had supports, I had people who I could ask, but I didn't ask questions, right? I didn't ask questions about tax stuff. I just was figuring stuff out. I didn't ask questions about business structure stuff. I didn't ask questions about how to set up paperwork and those kinds of things. So asking questions often and early to help yourself get set up, because what I have found, and I noticed this across a lot of other kind of mid-career clinicians, is that we are now figuring out a lot of steps because now there's all these different resources, particularly with social media. Now there's all these different resources to help you go into private practice. There's more coaches. There's online stuff. There's tax stuff for therapists. There's all this stuff that wasn't there when I was coming into the field that now helps you figure those things out. But I think a lot of us in mid-career are now getting those things together in this way in terms of structure, in terms of habits, in terms of patterns, in terms of paperwork, all this kind of stuff. So the earlier you can mm-hmm. do those things and really focus on those kind of foundational aspects of your business, you get to kind of build and grow in a different way with a different kind of foundation that I just wished was there. But I also wish that I took advantage of. I wasn't offering myself the vulnerability to ask more questions of colleagues who were already in the field more. I think I was just reacting to a lot of stuff. I just got to figure out how to get clients and figure out how to keep getting clients and figure out how to do this. I got to learn how to accept money, like doing all these things, and wasn't really focused on the outside of the business. I was so much in it. So I think utilizing those resources as much as you can. So these Facebook groups, these group consultation, all those kinds of things that are available, use those as early as you can, because they're really going to help you solidify stuff so that you can actually tap into creativity in like either other parts of your business, but just even other parts of your life, because these things are taken care of.
I love that. So I think definitely using your resources, being able to ask for help. And I think I'd add two more to that. I think not being afraid to pause and pivot, because I think when we are going and we're doing, we're just going and we're doing. And it's just like, okay, we're trying often to not let the bottom fall out, or what's the next thing that's on the to-do list? It's knowing that there's enough. We have enough. We have enough time. There's enough support. There are enough clients. There is enough. So pause for just a second and to see if what I'm doing, does it serve me? Does it feel good? Am I enjoying the work that I'm doing? Or is there a better way for me to do it? Or, you know, I'm doing these three things, but these two really feed my soul. So if I pause for a second to self-evaluate, be able to evaluate, and then if I need to pivot, then I can pivot, I think. So not only like asking for help, asking for support, pausing and pivoting, but I also think continuously learning. Just reminding myself, I don't know all the things. I don't have all the answers. Like you were saying, Dr. A, there's so many resources that are out there. It's like, if you don't know how to do that, then sometimes it comes up in our consult groups. Like, oh, this is a new platform people are using, and being okay with, oh, I don't know that. Or how are people doing that? What's a new technique for doing that? Or how are you doing onboarding or, you know, new patients? So being not afraid to just continuously learn. You don't have the answers. I'm always learning something new, and I'm not afraid to pause and pivot. And going back to Dr. A, like, ask for help. I think it helps us to not be able to burn out.
I would also add something that I'm seeing more in emerging therapists. I think because of social media, all these different groups, that there is this assumption and or pressure to have this like six-figure practice really, really soon out of school. And not saying it's impossible, y'all. Don't come for me. Not saying it's not possible. Not saying don't be motivated towards it. But I'm seeing a lot more therapists, really, really early therapists, having a lot of pressure to fill a practice immediately, to fill a practice, mm-hmm. to have perfectly niched down, to have two populations that they're really, really seeking to build their practice. And if it doesn't happen in the first like 6 months or a year, really being in a tailspin, because they see all this stuff online about established practices. Mm-hmm. And it's so subjective, right? That I have colleagues who have established practices that are seeing 35 people a week. And I have colleagues whose full-time is 11 people a week. There's so much, I guess, kind of just subjectivity to that. But really being mindful or being able to nuance like motivation versus pressure, because there is this story or this sense that any of us with full practices did it very quickly, and that we're just always getting clients all the time, and that every screening converts to a client, and every client converts to a long-term client, and everything, right? So I think there's some type of disservice that's happening, right, in terms of feeding this beast around productivity and growth and whatever six figures means to people now, that should happen in this unique space, in the private practice space.
But that's why that self-awareness stuff comes into. It's like, do I really want to have 35 people a week, right? Is that what it's going to take for me to make the six figures? Like, at what cost? Or do I do this and do this very well, and so I can still get to my six figures, but it may take me a little more time and I'm not burning out, and I am watering this other part of me with my other friends. And so, yeah, it's not always doing, but taking some time to really be. And that's to be self-aware.
Such beautiful advice. Thank y'all so much for sharing that. I think that that will be really helpful to younger clinicians in the field. So I appreciate you sharing that. So remind us all where we can stay connected with you. What is your website? I know, Dr. Joy, you talked about not really being on social media. So any social media handles you want to share are places where people can connect with you.
Yeah, I'm definitely on there. Listen, it's not popping every single day, but when it's on there, it's on there. But I'm at Ask Dr. Joy. That's A-S-K-D-R-J-O-Y on all platforms online.
And what about you, Dr. A?
So my practice can be found at www.ascensionbehavioralhealth.com. That's A-S-C-E-N-S-I-O-N, behavioralhealth.com. And I can be found on Instagram at Dr. Ayana A, which is Dr. D-R underscore A-Y-A-N-N-A underscore A.
Perfect. We'll be sure to include that in the show notes so that people don't have to look too hard to find either of you. Well, thank y'all so much for joining me again. Always a pleasure.
Always.
Always a pleasure.
I'm so glad Dr. Ayana and Dr. Jor were able to join me for this conversation. To learn more about them and their work, be sure to visit the show notes at therapyforblackgirls.com/session368. And don't forget to text two of your girls right now and tell them to check out the episode. If you're looking for a therapist in your area, visit our therapist directory at therapyforblackgirls.com/directory. And if you want to continue digging into this topic or just be in community with other sisters, come on over and join us in the Sister Circle. It's our cozy corner of the internet designed just for Black women. You can join us at community.therapyforblackgirls.com. This episode was produced by Elise Ellis and Zaria Taylor. Editing was done by Denison Bradford. Thank y'all so much for joining me again this week. I look forward to continuing this conversation with you all real soon. Take good care. State Farm believes understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount, because it provides a platform to share valuable stories and information that uplifts our community. We know how valuable it is to seek support, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm's here to help, funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities, and like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Whether you're in your foodie girl era, always in go mode, or figuring out how to add more healthy options into your or your children's diets, the high-quality protein in dairy foods like Greek yogurt and cottage cheese can help you stave off hunger and recover faster. So go ahead and build your charcuterie boards with aged cheeses, refuel after a workout with some Greek yogurt, or enjoy a Tex-Mex moment with some queso fresco to get the protein that can provide energy to fuel your day. This ad is brought to you by Undeniably Dairy.